This is the Communication Research Podcast, a production of the Communication Research Center at Boston University. This podcast is a colloquium presentation by Professor Ed Downs of Boston University titled Congressional Press Secretaries, the Story of Capitol Hill's Image Makers.
Thank you. I was thinking about the audience. I was in a homeless shelter over break. You know, my girlfriend is a physician for homeless people. So she was concerned about this homeless guy, so we got in the car in the snow and went looking for this guy. I went into the Pine Street Inn, which is a homeless shelter. I think Daryl might have worked there. Yeah. It's rough in there, man. And I wasn't scared at all. But today I'm scared. So one of the things I'm scared about is that we've got such a great, a brilliantly diverse audience. And I just talked about how I was scared, Tom. And not the Dean walks in.
I'm going to sit back like you do.
Oh, you got it. But I was scared for a lot of reasons. One of the reasons I was scared was because there's such brilliant research power right here in the room. I work with some of the colleagues. You can match these folks with anyone in the country when it comes time to look at the value of social scientific research. These guys are the ones. And truth be told, without being self-effacing, they're much smarter than I about this. So I'm really honored when I see particularly the folks who teach research come. Conversely, we have all the practitioners here who've seen research in real life, the real thing, as it really happens. And so that's an audience as well. I know, for example, Carolyn, Professor Clark, was involved with research for some time in her work, her professional work, before she came here. In addition to that, we've got some grad students who've studied research who are really brilliant. And then we've got the smartest people, and those are the undergrads who are going to be smarter than everybody else. So we're glad that you're here, and thank you very much for coming. This is really fun. I feel like I'm defending my dissertation. I wanted to share with you a quotation. There's a quotation. This is a brand new copy of a book, and the brand new book is a book called Public Relations Strategies and Tactics. And when I open up to page 502, an interesting thing happens. What happens is that there's a quotation. There's a piece of knowledge that we want to share. And let me share with you that piece of knowledge. Capitol Hill's press secretaries play a significant role in the shaping of America's messages and consequent public policies. In their role as proxy for individual members, the press secretaries act as gatekeepers, determining what information to share with and to hold from the media. Thus, they have command over news shared with the citizenry. Here's the interesting thing. That quote came from this research. So the brilliant thing about research, particularly social scientific, is that it's a process of discovery through which we get knowledge, and that knowledge is then passed on to your professors when we study, and then we pass it on to you in books such as this. So that'll be read all over the place. You can just pass that around. I have a paper clip that they can see it, because my name's in it. That's why I want it. The other thing is, this has been a fairly long process. I'm going to be talking to you about a kaleidoscopic view of research, and what I want to share with you here, what I hope to do, is to give you an appreciation for the fullness and the richness of research as it emerges, to indicate the fact that research is alive, and that we'll have a number of studies over time that build on one another. I thought you might get a kick out of this one. This is the earlier edition of the textbook, and this is the age I was when I started the research, and here's my picture.
So you can see that as well.
All right. You can hit it, Austin. Thanks. The data is really interesting. You know, one of the great things in research is that there's all these opportunities to us as social scientists to explore the human condition. And the fancy term that they use, I believe, is epistemology, or the study of knowledge. How can we come to know something? And there's these two paradigms, or these two ways of looking at that. There's a qualitative and a quantitative. And some people say I'm in the qualitative camp, some say I'm in the quantitative camp, but really we should be in both. And so what I'm going to show you next is just a very brief outline of all the studies that informed this presentation and that have informed some of the work that I've been doing since about 1997 on congressional press secretaries. So if you, that's a number of press secretaries. So we're looking right, you know,
from 92 to 212. That's all the kind of research that's been building in this. And it's really forced me to be both a qualitative researcher doing interviews and focus groups, and a quantitative researcher doing some experiments and survey research. Well, collectively, what we find is that research study number one eventually leads me to research study number whatever that is, which I'll be doing during a sabbatical next semester. Now, the birth of the project is very, very interesting. Where did this come from? Well, let me share a story with you. I didn't start my doctoral program until I was about 33 years old. And by that time, some of my colleagues were already established or nearly established experts. I'm standing right next to one of them right now. And as a consequence of that, I went into my doctoral program, this is the truth, to get out. I just wanted to finish. Because I said, geez, I'm going to be 37, 38 years old. I've given up money over the time to pursue this craft. What am I doing? Right? So while my friends are buying houses, I was buying copies of, you know, theory books. So I went to a scholar, a guy named Mel DeFleur, and Mel is really a noted scholar, a brilliant guy. He's sort of the BS, he's in our field, mass communication. I would put Mel in the realm of the B.F. Skinner if he were a psychologist. I presented that once to Mel, and he said, no, I don't have an international reputation. But I went to Mel, this great scholar, and I said, Mel, I'd like to finish my dissertation quickly, and I'm thinking about studying press secretaries. He said, what do you mean? I said, press secretaries on Capitol Hill. He said, well, do a study. We did a study. And the next thing, after we had gotten some results from that study, he said, okay, that's a good idea. I said, thank you very much. And my dissertation topic was ready to go. So you can see this. This is Mel on the left, a distinguished professor now at Louisiana University. The guy on the right is a guy named Dennis Kinsey, who some of you guys know. Dennis was actually the dissertation advisor who took me through my most intense work with the press secretaries. Dennis is not only a good guy, but he'll beat you up if you're not careful. So that was good. Have you ever seen the Seinfeld episode when George wants to be cool? George really wants to be cool. So he hangs with this really cool guy. That's how I felt with Dennis. I just want to be like Dennis. I'm a dit, a Dennis in training. That's what's one of them. So Dennis is this really cool guy. Anyway, Mel is the guy who said, that's a good idea. Congressional press secretaries are something you should study. Dennis is the guy over the next 3 or 4 years with whom I worked who helped me to do the preliminary research. Here's a quote I think that summarizes the work to some degree of what these folks are up to. I think the hardest thing, especially when I've encountered new press secretaries, was that they couldn't divorce their personal feelings from what they had to do for their boss. They had to forget that they didn't exist, that they were actually their boss. And they were also their boss's spouse, and they played both roles constantly, all the time. You'll notice when you first came in here, there was a quote up here as the pictures rolled of Washington, D.C. And those pictures are very interesting. And the idea behind that was that there was a press secretary who's hidden. The good news is this. You don't have to listen to me the whole presentation because I have a surprise for you. We have a real press secretary right here. Mike Dodge was a member of our program. He was a press secretary on Capitol Hill. He has not seen the presentation, and I'm going to ask him at the end of the presentation to respond to what I said. I'm going to pay him well if he says something decent. I can't fight anymore, but there's some guys I grew up with who could. Anyway, so okay, I'm going to hit that. One thing that happened is, when I spoke to Mel early on, I said, you know, Mel, I think I'll just do a survey of press secretaries. And he began to teach me about research at that moment. And he said, well, Eddie, a survey is an interesting thing. From where will you get your questions? And I said, well, I'll look at the literature. So I looked at the literature. And there were fewer than 50 pages in which the press secretaries had served as units of analysis. Or put another way, there were fewer than 50 pages from which the press secretaries were directly studied, or the units from which we got our information. So that didn't help much. There's one from 89 by a guy named Timothy Cook, one from 91 by a guy named Stephen Hess, and that was the gist. So I went back to Mel and I said, I've looked at the literature, it doesn't give me much direction, but I want to do a survey, because I equated research with survey research. And Mel said, Eddie, in essence, you don't know what you're doing. Don't you realize that your research question is going to determine the method that you use? and the literature to some degree should speak to that. What you should do is to get on the phone, cast a very wide net, and just begin talking to these folks up on Capitol Hill. See what emerges from that, what themes emerge, what illustrative quotes you can use as a means to push this forward. So my research partner and I, my partner is making, I think making about $210,000 across the river. It's a little more than I am. So he and I did this, and we just got on the phone and started talking to these people. And I thought that was a brilliant way to start the research. We didn't have a preconceived agenda. We tried to be systematic. We tried to be objective. We tried to have some control. But largely went through, and these themes began to emerge. So who are these people? What are we doing? Well, one thing that came up was this idea that the press secretaries are largely, my term, babysitters. They take excessively good care of the members, short for member of Congress, who they represent. So I wanted to show you a few quotations from the babysitter that came through these series of interviews. One was this. One participant described her job as that of a babysitter sometimes. Another as a babysitter all the time. The group talked about receiving and responding to calls at 4 a.m. from members for whom they work, and about delivering bad news so the media or the member wouldn't have to. The participants seemed resigned to this rather than resentful toward this role. Perhaps they liked being on call for a powerful person. Those data actually came from a focus group, because the third study on which I worked was one where we actually went to my friend's condominium in Washington, D.C. She had been the Surgeon General's press secretary. She had been a press secretary for someone named Mitch McConnell, who's now the Republican leader in the Senate. And we went, and we just began to talk to these people. And we said, what can they teach us? And again, this theme of a babysitter emerged. So here are the survey, here are the qualitative data, and I'm going to pass those around, if I may, so you can get a look at those as well. Let me hit the next one. Here's another quotation that again was illustrative of this theme of a babysitter. The member would wear a white shirt. Oh, this is a good one. Don't read. This is pretty good. The person about whom she's speaking is someone most everybody would know. And I can't tell you who it is. But it's a really important person. Okay. The member would wear a white shirt and go on camera, and you basically couldn't see him. It was like nothing from the neck up. And I told him one day, look, I do TV for you, and you've got to wear a blue shirt. Sounds like your mother, doesn't it? Otherwise, I'm not letting you on camera anymore. He believed me, and he smuggled the blue shirt out of his house and into my car while I was visiting his house so I could take it to the office. It hung in the office for 3 years, and I made him change every time he went on television. So you can hit the next one. What I began to do then, and again, the theme I'm trying to permeate through our discussion today is the metamorphosis of research, yes? How it builds on each other. So from this early work trying to see what the literature said, from these unstructured phone interviews, from focus groups eventually that helped us to ask better questions, we eventually arrived at this idea, and this babysitter, as an example, was so illustrative that I actually made a fairly strong statement that said, the press secretary has an intensely personal relationship with a member. This is an example where we move from a qualitative approach to a quantitative approach, or another word, from a qualitative paradigm to a quantitative paradigm. I wanted to use the word paradigm because it's a graduate student word, so I've done it, so check that out. Well, the scale was from 1 to 7. And so what we looked at was, I'm involved with the member's life. I know well his or her moods, values, and personal struggles. They all very strong agreement with that. I worry about the member taking good care of his or her health, both physical and mental. I worry about that. And the member confides in me and trusts what he or she says inside these walls. I know it's double-barreled, but Dennis let me do it. Okay, we'll go to the next one. What came from this was actually we would look at a grouping of questions and we would develop an alpha. And we would say, how strong is this group of questions? So you can hit that, and I'll read to you what came up here. Of the 14 indices built, about one-third were found to have conservatively reliable alphas. These can be used in future studies with confidence as valid indicators of the concepts they represent. Among them were. Now let me back up and tell you where we are. This process started not knowing anything. A discussion with Mel DeFleur. Mel DeFleur said, check the literature. We checked the literature. Not very much. Next thing that Mel said was, now what you should do is do some unstructured telephone interviews. We did that. from the telephone interviews, we could focus our script a bit more, and eventually we brought that to a focus group. From the focus group, the telephone interviews, and a series of one-on-one interviews, we actually then were able to develop the survey questions. Does that make sense to you? And what you're always trying to hope, what I was hoping, was that there would be an affinity between the survey idea, i.e. the idea of a babysitter, and the quantitative data that backed that up. And the slide that I just showed you, that was the case. There were some other indicators as well that I thought were pretty interesting, some fairly strong alphas. One was this idea of respect. Of course, it sort of sounds fairly normative. These guys have a tremendous respect for the members. And you say, well, you've got to respect, I've got to respect Barton, or I've got to respect Tom, because they're my boss. And these guys respect it much more. I don't think it's an overstatement to suggest that some of the press secretaries respect these members as if they were their own baby or their own children. I mean, immense respect. And when we put together some questions, we had a fairly strong alpha for that. The second one, and this was an interesting one, I don't know, and I'm a little nervous to say this in front of Tom because he's a newspaper guy, so I don't really know, but they were willing to shut off reporters. That was a surprise for me, in the sense that if the reporter didn't treat them well or didn't do something properly, they would shut that person off. Another thing is about spin. They despise being called spin doctors, but there's a very interesting quote, because the quote is something such as this. I hate when they call me a spinner. You know, I put my best foot forward, but I'm not a spinner. As a matter of fact, what I try to do is tell the member's side of the story from his angle, but I'm not a spinner. And the whole thing was like this, and I said, well, they're schizophrenic just like I am. The last one here, and I think that Don would appreciate this in particular, perhaps Steve, Maureen, and I don't know, Joe may be coming either. In public relations, we try to say, are the press secretaries a member of the dominant coalition, or are they members of the people in the office who actually make the policies? In COM, the dominant coalition is Tom, and then the three chairs, Maureen and Dean Beagle in the back. Well, what we found, it was very interesting, and that is that the younger folks weren't, but as they got older, they moved from being a technician who would produce things to a strategist. I just got off the phone literally an hour and 20 minutes ago with a press secretary who had been up there for 20 years. And I got to talking to him about this. And actually, my discussion centered on what it was like to be a press secretary all of those years. But it also centered on something that I'm going to talk about momentarily. And that is how new media, social media, alternative media, speak to this field. One of the sources that I looked up your work, you've done three studies, I think, in this area, right? A PR in new media. The last came out in Kenton. A co-authored study, Kenton, I think in 2008. I also did something interesting. I spoke to my friend Steve, one of the best colleagues I've had. We've known each other for so long. And I said, Steve, I don't understand new media. Will you help me to understand it? And so I actually went through a script that I'm developing now that I'm using as I talk to press secretaries about new media. At this point, you should see a parallel. When the research started, we didn't understand what press secretaries were, so we had to ask some very broad questions, narrow them, and then measure them quantitatively. Much the same thing is happening right now when I'm looking at press secretaries and new media. There are virtually no data specifically on press secretaries where they have served as units of analysis in regard to issues of new media. Make sense to you? There's a lot on PR and new media. And so again, I'm doing this, and you know, it was really interesting. I'll just show you this real quick. These are the notes that I took over the last couple days. These are just notes that I take as I begin to talk to these people. I'll take a couple interesting conversations, and I'll get to those momentarily. What I can tell you definitively, or with a high degree of certainty, from the initial studies, from the initial phase of the study, probably from the first six or seven, is this. Number one is that the press secretary and the member of Congress share a special relationship. Of course they do. But this relationship is so intense that the press secretary sees the side of the member that no one else sees and is intricately involved, including issues related to policy, about what he or she thinks that member can or cannot do. The other thing I think that's interesting is if you go to Washington, D.C., I was up in the Alaskan Tundra. Remember where Sarah Palin said you can see Russia from Alaska? You guys remember that? Well, I was up there, and the newspaper up there had a quotation from the member of Congress. And I thought, I wonder who wrote that quotation. wonder if perhaps this press secretary actually said it and the member didn't know anything about it. I began thinking about that, and what I realized was that messages emanate thousands and thousands from Washington, D.C., throughout the country, actually throughout the world. And the press secretaries are an integral part of that. There's a section of the literature that talks about congressional staff and how people work for our representatives and senators. We don't even know who they are, but they have tremendous control. And I can tell you anecdotally that if you walk up to Capitol Hill and you go to the House side, you're going to see many folks in their late 20s with tremendous responsibility, but very little recognition. The next thing we found, obviously, is that they're the gatekeeper. They're certainly the gatekeeper in terms of information to the traditional media, but they're also the gatekeeper in another venue, and that is that they control who gets access to the member of Congress and who does not. This extreme respect comes to mind when we talk about what they do, namely that they talk about the boss, my boss, my boss. The reference, a synonym for the member of Congress, is my boss, which leads to the allegiance of the member. The next thing we find is that in terms of being media relations professionals, the press secretaries, it's an interesting process that happens, and it's closely correlated with their age. The younger folks tend to be junior counselors, doing news releases, doing basic things. The older folks, such as the gentleman with whom I spoke a little while ago, are folks who are out there doing active work, very, very involved all day with significant strategy. They're managing, they're looking at the social, the political, the cultural, the economic variables, how they change and how the member can influence that. As I mentioned too, I've talked about going beyond the facade, I've talked about lying and spinning. And the next one I like, because I use the word man a lot, is waves. Through the conversation with the press secretaries, I became curious and I said, how do you know the issues on which you focus? You've got so many issues out there. How do you choose the ones on which you're going to focus? And one of the press secretaries said, hey man, it's like a wave. He was from California. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, when the wave comes, we jump on it. And when the wave crashes, we jump off it and jump on another one. There's an interesting way to think about it. And the last thing is that these folks are certainly unique in all the world. There's no institution in the world like Congress, it's other democratic legislatures. There's no institution like that. Their bosses, at least on the House side, they get fired every 2 years. They work in an intensely political environment with intensely strong egos. They also, very interestingly enough, are folks who take their job extremely seriously, but we know nothing about it. And I used the term schizophrenic earlier. What I was suggesting was this. Their existence is largely schizophrenic because they babysit for the baby who tells them what to do. I wanted to move the research forward, and again, keeping with my theme, and that is that research is a metamorphosis. It continues to move forward. And just as Dean Behill's here, I want to just make sure that I mention something. We've done a recent study on this. Go to the next one just so we can show it. And there we are. See, there's Dean Behill right there. Thank you for coming. She and I did a very interesting study, and we looked at state-level press secretaries. And what I thought I'd do, what would be interesting, is to tell you a little bit about some of the survey data that these state-level press secretaries did. And I'm going to read to you, but I think reading's okay under this. And what you're going to see is that this research is very, very different from the qualitative research where we were just asking questions and getting opinions and observing and bringing people together. These were hard data. Based on the data collected, a sample of average legislative aides was produced. Who were these people? Where was the state legislature? What was up the street? This is a study of the Massachusetts state legislature. And what I'm hoping we can do is say, hey, you know, the state legislature is similar to Congress in many ways. A state government has a governor, national has a president. A state legislature is president. There's a Congress in the U.S. Judges, state judges, Supreme Court. So these were data that we actually gathered, from these state legislatures. Based on the data collected, a snapshot of the average legislature was produced. The mean age of the aides surveyed was 31. The aides were usually male, 73%, and hold a bachelor's degree while working primarily for Democrats. 53% self-identify as politically moderate. Interestingly enough, 91% indicated their boss to be chair of the highest ranking committee. As for legislative experience, respondents on average indicated having 4.6 years of previous experience, had spent 32 months in their current position, held 1.5 other positions. They're also spending approximately 26.7% of their work time dealing with media relations. We did a series of analyses based on this. There is an interesting thing that I thought we'd do in the very brief time that we had. There was a big difference in titles among the state aides. Additionally, differences in titles seem to correspond with differences in relation to the aides' relationship with the media. At a significant, at a 0.05 level, negative correlation was found between the differences in rank and the screening of media requests. Legislative aides with lower ranking titles also tended not to view themselves as having a mutually dependent relationship with reporters, while those with titles such as chief of staff and communication director did. There's a interesting process where what I'm doing now is I'm looking at former press secretaries. You ever think about this? You work in this unique environment. No one knows who you are. No one can name who you are. But you have this intense bullpen relationship day after day after day after day after day after day. You would talk to a member of Congress. Within 3 minutes, that member of Congress is on C-SPAN all over the world. And you just set up the appointment. Well, I became curious about former press secretaries, and this is some research that's going on right now. And again, the same pattern continues. We're doing a series of fairly structured phone interviews with these people, trying to determine what's going on. And what we find here is that there's four themes that seem to be emerging from these conversations. One, of course, is the influx of new media. They're all concerned about social new alternative media. A second thing is that almost all of them so far have stayed political. They've stayed in political positions. They may be doing government affairs for a corporation. They may be working for a legislator. Or they may even be working with a nonprofit entity, but on the political end. The other thing is that there's a weird thing that happened with these guys. It's so prevalent in the day. They want to win. They're extremely competitive. If you think that we're competitive here, these guys are extremely competitive. They want to win. And they bring that, if you will, winner's attitude to their work. The next thing we find is that they believe very much that their work solidified their strategic and tactical skills. New media is very much on their mind. And here's a quotation that I pulled related to that. Well, this is what one of the former press secretaries said. Well, I also think there's the increasingly competitive media environment that allows people to get the news where they want to get it. I think it speaks, my theorist friends can tell me better than I, but I think it speaks to uses and gratifications. Simply the idea that they attend to media that reinforces their predisposed beliefs. Now, we move on to the latest study, and I was actually collecting data on this last night and tonight through these phone interviews. And it deals with new social and alternative media. This is an interesting thing. Anybody heard of the Grateful Dead? I like this quote, so just break us up for a minute, okay? It's pretty good. Don't do anything illegal. David Merman Scott and Brian Helligan, two lead thinkers in the new media communication management sphere, recently came out with a book titled Marketing Lessons from the Grateful Dead. The Grateful Dead, who knows what are the Grateful Dead? Everybody over 30. The Grateful Dead were a band that played rock and help me.
Like jam band? They're revolutionized
the way
rock is played.
They revolutionized?
Yeah, it's more like a
goodbye.
It's kind of like softer than
Jimi
Hendrix. Just a little
better.
I don't
know. I'm so glad
you're here. It's my student.
All I remember, I went to the Grateful Bowling Less concert before Jerry died.
Yeah.
Up in Albany.
Maybe they don't.
Jerry Garcia Ice Cream. This is more than we need to know. This is really relevant to the social side of the region. The bottom line here is this. We paid like $50 a ticket, and like within 10 seconds they crashed the gate and we had our stupid ticket. So. Starting in the 1960s, the Grateful Dead pioneered many social media and inbound marketing concepts that businesses all across industries use today. The Dead broke almost every rule in the music industry. They encouraged their fans to record records and trade tapes. They built a mailing list and sold concert tickets directly to fans. And they built their business model on live concerts, not live album sales. By cultivating a dedicated, active community, collaborating with their audience to co-create the Deadhead lifestyle and give away freemium content, The Dead pioneered many social media and inbound marketing concepts successfully used by businesses across all industries today. So these are some questions that I'm beginning to explore. As we look at the influence of new social and alternative media, I was talking to someone once and he said, oh, this has been a major change. In the work of the press secretaries, I don't think major is the right word. I say profound. It brings us new ethical questions, new ways to view the world, new paradigms to explore. It speaks to what it means to be a human being communicating back and forth in this new media environment. And so what I wanted to do is that toward the conclusion of my presentation, before I ask Mike to offer some reflections, is share with you where these questions are coming from. Would you rather have a front page story in the New York Times or coverage on a popular blog? Question two, now that constituents can reach you directly in real time, how do you handle the avalanche of conversations? Professor Quigley helped me with that. What I'm finding, interestingly enough, with that, and what I had found a little bit before, is that they seem to be handling it quite well using new technology. Tell me about how new media and the member bypass reporters and go directly to audiences. You've heard this a million times, right? That you can bypass the media and go directly. Sarah Palin does it all the time, doesn't she? Sarah Palin gets on, tweets, and she says, forget the media, this is what I'm going to do. Interesting. The person I was just speaking with, he was a Democrat up on Capitol Hill, and he said, I hate Sarah Palin because she disgraces democracy. Who cares what you get for lunch? So, if members want to join the new media game, and again, that's what Professor Quigley helped me to get in line, some don't want to play the game. They have to decide how much to trust the judgment of their press secretary, particularly when it comes to real-time communication. What I found here is that in terms of policy, the offices tend to have a policy that suggests, and this is only based on a few interviews that I've done since speaking with Professor Quigley, they have a few people in the office who can tweet, either one or two, one of whom is always the press secretary. The next thing is members choose to assume the first communicator role, example, they themselves treat. How do you feel, members feel about that role? Let's go quickly. Next one is, do you or the member communicate in real time via new media? When the member is in committee, in the cloakroom or on the floor, here's the story. When the member of Congress is on the floor, how many people think he or she is able or allowed to tweet? How many thinks he or she is not allowed to tweet? They're allowed to tweet. How have new media changed the designing and targeting? Again, these certainly, we've heard this before, right? That you can design messages like never before and target them. One press secretary told me she has to guard against over-reliance on the media. This is an interesting one. I think some of my PR, maybe Cheryl has seen this, or Don or Steve, I'm not sure. A book recently came out with the title, Putting the Public Back in Public Relations. What influence do new media have when it comes to putting the constituent back into public relations? Next, there are many political issues on which you could choose to focus your time and energy. Tell me how new media influenced these choices. All of these questions they're not just nifty things that I came up with, but they all speak to the metamorphosis of the research. Do you remember earlier when I talked about the guy from California who said it's a wave man and you jump on issues as they come? I'm curious how these press secretaries might be influenced, or how the wave idea might change with new media. Is there a policy in your office, I've already said this, addressing which staff, including yourself, may say what to whom via new media? Who, for instance, may blog and who may not? Are there official policies about use of Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, etc.? Again, this is a study that's very much underway. I'm not sure, but what I'm finding preliminarily is that there are official policies, that it's the press secretary who is able to use these. And one or two other people. Next thing, from websites to wikis, from podcasts to blogs, everything is changing. Tell me about your efforts to stay on top of such things. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing with that one. What comes to mind when you hear the term search engine optimization? To what degree do media speak to the integration, the conversion of journalism, advertising, and marketing? And do new media enhance two-way communication? there's a lot of, there's something in the public relations literature that talks about this. And it argues, in fact, that new media do enhance two-way communication. But I'm very curious about that. Because I'm curious about the concept of two-way communication. And what does that mean in the new environment? When it's no longer point to multipoints, but it can be point to point. Okay, thanks, Austin. What I'm headed to next is I'm going to go up to Capitol Hill. I got a little grant for this. And I'm going to shadow a press secretary for like 3 days or 4 days, and then shadow another one, and actually tell the story of that, and Mike is helping me to get access to that. Real quickly, the book that I'm looking at has these chapters, and what I wanted to do was actually show you who they are. Who are the congressional press secretaries? What is a typical day? What do they think of the members they serve? What are the press secretaries' relationships with the media like? How should press secretaries be categorized? Are they public relations professionals or something else? What power do the press secretaries have? I've been looking a lot at the power literature, trying to understand that. And like Madison, who else is in the nonprofit class? We're looking at issues of power in nonprofit. How have computer-based online communication new media impacted the press secretary's work? How have career choices and approaches to communication management of former press secretaries been influenced? What can the work of aides who work for the media for a state legislator do? And does the press secretary's work embark on the US democracy? So let me kind of recap. It's going to take me about 60 seconds. Where we've been to. I hope that to some degree, at least I learned this process, I came to appreciate different methods, whether focus group, whether unstructured interviews, a semi-structured interview, an ethnography, survey research, experiments, all of those are ways through which we collected data. But there's been a constant metamorphosis arriving at what we've come. Now, I think my discussion today is flawed in one way because I don't leave you saying, definitively, this is what we know, other than those 10 points. But that wasn't the goal. The goal was to share information that I knew, thanks to Professor Wu, who said, tell the results. share information I knew, but also to give you an appreciation how research is alive. It's alive. You can read that quotation yourself, and I'm going to hand the floor over now to Press Secretary, Professor, Adjunct Professor Mike Dodge, who just had a little boy. Now, I just want to share that I hope he says something good, because he hasn't seen this. I don't know what he's going to say. He's going to say it's all wrong.
When I first went to Washington, that was the last year of the Clinton administration, and I used to always hear this term, FOB. I don't know if some of the older people in the crowd ever heard FOB. Friend of Bill. Okay, and we used that term to describe people sort of in influential places, high positions, that were friends of the Clinton family. I call myself a friend of Ed. He's really inspired my career path to this point in many different ways. I had an interest when I came to grad school here, going down and doing this kind of type of work, and it was just fantastic to come across Ed and his research and get his guidance along the way. And he's played a major role in bringing me back to BU, which is just wonderful too. So great presentation. No need to send your thugs out after me. Collect that check a little bit later on too. Great, again, that someone has this interest. To so many people, it might seem very esoteric, very deep in the weeds. I love that you have this focus and that all these people are here today interested to hear this presentation. Just a few anecdotes as you were going, just kind of add some color to what Ed was talking about. You were talking some of those earlier quotes about that relationship with the elected official, that fierce allegiance, some of the you almost become family, some of those awkward things that come up, and I certainly agree with all of that. I think probably one of the more awkward conversations that I had with a member of Congress, kind of a conservative guy, was we started doing some TV appearances. He was on some of the cable news networks at night, and just didn't really look good on camera. And I was so focused on the message, what he was communicating, the bullet points, and he looked horrible. You know, there's the 5 o'clock shadow, and again, the colors, you know, clashing ties and things like that. And I had to take him aside and have a conversation about makeup, having like powders and stuff like that in the office. And it was just so out of character for me and just a real bizarre thing to do with an elected official, but these are things that you have to think about sometimes. Of course, that allegiance too. I think in this job, it's kind of, sometimes it's a difficult exercise, but it's applicable to what you do as a communicator outside of government, private sector, nonprofit, that ability to defend and explain positions that you don't necessarily agree with. That came up from time to time. Wasn't always pleasant, but I think that's a good exercise as a communicator. It's something that's important to be able to do that. A couple of keys to success. This is kind of my quick elevator speech that Ed's asked me to give a couple of guest lectures in his classes the last couple of semesters. But talk about four key points that I think that are the keys to success being a congressional press secretary. And again, I think this has application to other sectors too. The first one is to be a wordsmith. And again, when I say be a wordsmith, it's be able to effectively and persuasively communicate messages on behalf of the elected official, whoever it is you're working for. Also, the ability to translate wonk speak. I don't know when I say wonk speak, if you know what I'm talking about. It's sort of that jargon that you have in Congress. Congressional district, markup. Language like that, be able to translate that into plain English. Sometimes people don't understand that language. Point two, think like a reporter, okay? So always have your radar up. Kind of understand reporters, what their interest areas are. Some are into political intrigue, some are really issues. Sort of getting a read for that and knowing who to go to when, sort of massaging those interests is very helpful. Third point that I have, anticipate questions. Again, this is applicable to communicators in any field, really. It's important that you're able to provide an unvarnished perspective to your boss on what to say and how to say it. A lot of that depends on your relationship. I've been really lucky. I've worked for two members of Congress and a congressional committee, and they've been genuinely decent guys, very interested in my opinions, and we work well together. Unfortunately, just the way it is, there's a lot of scoundrels and prima donnas in elected office too. I've heard all sorts of horror stories about that element, being able to have that sort of open relationship with your boss to be able to tell them when they didn't do something well and how to improve, but I think it's very important. And the fourth point is to be a master of substance. And when I say master of substance, it's a lot of things that fit under here. I think working on Capitol Hill is very important. Course, to have institutional knowledge of how Congress works. And I think that might play an important role in, I saw in Ed's research, he said a lot of former press secretaries, myself included, stay political in what they do after they leave the Hill. And I think there's a lot of value just in the institutional knowledge and the contacts that you make up there. So there's a lot of things you're able to do with your career from that point on. Also, under being a master of substance, again, being able to explain and defend issues and positions. And I just have one anecdote that I've shared a few times in Ed's class, talking about just the wide spectrum of things that you might deal with on any given day working on Capitol Hill. One of my crowning achievements was my boss had worked on, again, he was on the Ways and Means Committee, so it was tax issues, sort of kind of dull material. But he had was able to work a provision, was dealing with mortgages, forgiving debt on mortgages, a tax benefit. He tested some legislation. This was back, I guess it was, Bush was still in office, so it was 2007, 2008. And so there was a signing ceremony down in Rose Garden, and my boss was invited to go down. He brought me. It was wonderful. So we were out in the White House in the Rose Garden, and the president gets up and does the bill sign, gives a little speech, and recognizes my boss. So it was just wonderful. And so we leave, and we're driving back up to the Hill, and my phone's ringing, my BlackBerry, and I'm looking, and there's all this cryptic message about the person who I was working for at the time was from Kentucky, okay? So back in Kentucky, something had happened, there was a goat on someone's farm had gotten loose, and it was a rabbit or something, and it's really been creating havoc in this little town in Kentucky, and the sheriff found it and took out his gun and unloaded eight bullets into this goat, and people were really angry because this was private property. So we had constituents calling, and they had concerns, and then it turned into a news story, and someone wanted a response for that too. Yeah, so you just never know. You just totally are all over the place. Yeah, local issues matter sometimes more than the national issues, but you're just all over the place. So that's really some of the anecdotes that I have to share. New technology, very, very important. I think your presentation, some of the data you presented, is dead on. It's changing how you do our jobs. And the last point I'd like to make, I think the dean left, but I say this to anyone that's willing to listen. I know there's some important people here. I would really love to see someday here at BU a focus on political communication. I really think that there's interest in students. Perhaps someday there'll be resources too. I'd love to see that happen.
Thank you. We have a couple quick questions, but there really are some folks. Jim has been working like crazy with the Communication Research Center, keeping us up to date. My friend, Dr. Michael Lasmar, we've been together a long time, and you're largely, you should be credited for us being here today. The foundation you built, the CRC that you built is really admirable, and I admire you and thank you for it. And Mina, thank you for being so kind and helping put this together. Certainly I want to thank my friend Mike, who's been here, and the great Austin, who's put this all together. I thought we could end, and we'll finish at 4:30, a couple minutes after. I want to offer you three on-the-spot bios of these press secretaries. Who are these people? Then we'll open up for a couple questions. And the great Karis, who had worked for the State Senate in Texas, is going to actually share, why don't you share four of them?
Okay. I'm just going to read them here. So Don, 34, participated in the initial focus group. He's worked as a press secretary for the same member for 11 years. The well-established member that Don serves represents a conservative district in California. He and I spoke in the back office at his desk in a small room he shares with the chief of staff next door to the member's office. At the start of the interview, Don smiled and said, "I've been up here way, way too long." He has begun searching for a new job. His new wife works for an advocacy group. She's a staunch Democrat and he is a reliable Republican. Chaz, about 32, has recently left the House as a press secretary and moved to the same position in the Senate. He works for a freshman Republican. He graduated from a nationally recognized university in 1986, and from there worked his way up from a position at the Republican National Committee, where he interned during college. Following college, he did everything from speech writing to press calls to event planning for the RNC. He then worked for the Republican National Convention in 1988, then the Bush campaign, then for secretaries in two cabinet-level offices. Next, he served as a House press secretary for 6 years. 6 months ago, he moved to the Senate side of Capitol Hill. Lori, about 29, works for a fairly high-profile Democratic member. She was a television reporter, anchor, and producer for 2.5 years. After arriving in Washington, D.C., she worked as an assignment editor in the News Bureau on Capitol Hill. She began working for her current boss in 1991. She is a registered independent. Justin, about 26, he and I spoke in the smaller Longworth cafeteria. He, as did so many of the other press secretaries, spoke with confidence and maturity beyond his years. My terrible habit in college, he said, was that I would go for about 2 semesters, and I'd take a semester off, and I'd go run a campaign, then I'd come back for a couple semesters, then I'd go out to a campaign. So it took a little longer than usual to get through college. He has begun graduate courses in political management. He works for a Democrat.
We've got just a few minutes. Are there any questions, please? Thank you, Cheryl. Make it easy. Don't be talking about the alphas and the reliability.
No, I've noticed with your the earlier research with press secretaries, you said there was this statistic that jumped out at me. The 26.7% of their work time is spent doing media relations. And I was wondering kind of your thoughts about that percentage. If you think it is small, large, if it's changed now with new media. It just kind of jumped out at me.
It's a beautiful question. And I can tell you that comes from the people who work on the legislature here in Massachusetts. So it's not the Congressional Press Secretary. I would suggest the Congressional Press Secretary probably spends 85 to 95% of his or her time with media-related work. But here, what we find is we don't have there's so much more to tell. We don't have a designated press secretary. We have aides who do many things, part of which is working. So I would say, who is the aide who deals with the media? I would get that, and those aides said about a quarter of the time. Thanks, Cheryl. Thank you. Thanks for not being mean to me.
What else? Thanks, Steve.
Dr. Downs, I'm not looking for data. I'm just looking for either your or Mike's instincts about, you know, this piece that Dan that you had that I really liked was about the need to win. And so I sort of sit here and think, I'm imagining that they bring the need to win and a high level of idealism to the job. Any thoughts about when they leave, is that idealism still intact or does it get washed into the whatever?
You know, one theme, Steve, that we've used throughout this thing is the metamorphosis of the research, how it's moving. I have an inclination, but I can't suggest this is valid yet, that they may become a bit cynical, perhaps, of their time on Capitol Hill, seeing the sausage being made, and then doing that. That's what some of the early research is showing. The other piece, though, is very interesting, and that is that they love it. So there's kind of a dichotomy. The answer is, I don't know. What do you think, Mike?
I would say, personally, my experience was, it was day to day. Sometimes you would go in and it would be absolutely inspiring. Everything went well. You saw something maybe outside of your own domain, work out, help people. There was other days, again, the sausage making, where it was very discouraging or overly political. Something bad happened in the process. But overall, the overarching feeling was fascination. It's just a fascinating place to be.
Yeah, it's very interesting, isn't it, how that goes? I'm not sure what we're going to find in it. We'll know next year better. The interesting thing, Mike, what you mentioned, and that is that no one with whom I've spoken, and maybe they just don't want to say it to me, has looked back and said, I wasted my time. They're all very, very glad. There's not, so I spent my time. I wish I wasn't up there. I should have been doing something else. And I suspect you're glad for the years you spent up there. What else? Somebody else had a question. Mina.
I've looked at some of your work on power, and I thought I wanted to ask you about, because you were near the end, you were talking about new media, and I thought, and just wanted to get your take on whether or not with new media you think it affords greater power for press secretaries, and not only their role or their communication capabilities, but kind of expand a little bit on that, just because I'm curious, or if it does or doesn't.
Sure. I was actually curious how new media, more generically, are shifting power relationships. And again, I went to Steve to educate me a little bit. I looked very carefully at the literature and actually developed a whole graduate course on that. So
what came of this, interestingly, Mina, was this. The power to bypass a traditional journalist is certainly evident. In the early research, when I asked the press secretaries, what are the messages that you love most, that are most effective, and they consistently said, when I can bypass traditional media, when I can bypass the media and go directly to the constituents through, for example, a town hall meeting. That was one thing. Now what I'm finding, though, is that the power is coming back to them, because you've got constituent groups who can organize very, very quickly, who can respond in real time. There's this story about this guy, I was talking to him, he said, you know, you send me letters about a dog, I asked about a sick horse. You didn't read my letter. Now I'm going to let everybody know. And he hits a button, everybody knows. So there is this interesting power shift that's going on. And I don't know the answer to that. One of the great things about doing this work is that I can say I don't know. But I will know more as we go further. I also think that certainly the theme, and it's fairly normative, is the idea that we can bypass traditional media. That empowers them. And that's really where someone like Sarah Palin is getting most of her power, a lot of her power, because she's not dealing with the mainstream media, at least not as much as others in the past have. She's typing, and then she's finding what she needs to do. Isn't that interesting? So power's an interesting concept. One more question. Yeah, thanks. Leslie.
Interesting with, like, your ethnographic research that's coming up.
Yes.
Are you approaching that with new questions you're looking to answer, or are you more trying to
It's so different. Honestly, it's unlike a physician who has studied surgery but never done it. I've studied ethnographies, but I've never done one. This is my first one. What I want to do is, I want to immerse myself in a naturally occurring set of events. I want to immerse myself. And I think what I'm going to bring to that is, as close as I can, is humanly possible, a blind slate. I'm afraid if I go into preconceived ideas on this first step, I may chase those rather than this. That's what I'm doing, but I have to actually talk to some of our research colleagues to see if that's the way to do it. So I don't have that. I do have an understanding, though, I think, that's deeper, and I have these questions that are on my mind, and those may be an integral part of at least the questions that I asked during the day. Yeah, thanks for asking. You remember Margaret Mead? Margaret Mead, one of the ancient cultures, and she dove into those, and she said, this is what's going on. It's not a quantitative approach in the least, but it's an interesting way to understand the issue. Anything else? Yes, thank you, Maureen.
Well, thank you for doing this. This has been fascinating. Brought back some wonderful memories. But I'd also be interested in getting the perspective of whether or not press secretaries today see the new media, the social media, as working for or against them, particularly in relation to keeping their boss in power, as well as keeping their boss safe. And I think it would be very interesting to ask that.
I am, and I've begun to. I can share you a little bit about what I'm learning. Thanks for the question, because when I hear that, I think, okay, this may be, I may be on track with this. I'll tell you one interesting thing, if I may, about the press secretaries. I like talking to them. They're good folks. As one said to me, nobody ever cares about what I do. I'm really glad to talk to you. You know? Nobody gives a damn about who I am. Geez, I'm working my butt off here. I'm working all these hours. I'm sweating. I'm praying that he says the right thing on the floor. He says the wrong thing, it kills me, and nobody cares. So the answer is, you know. You know what I found that was interesting, Maureen, is that of course they have no choice but to work with the media. And I asked them the question, the last three people I've asked, I said, how much of your time working with the media is with traditional and how much is with them? Now I know we could define those, but I just wanted to get a sense. The first said 85% traditional, 15% new. The second one said 50-50. And the third one with whom I spoke today said 85% traditional. Now, here's what's interesting. The person with whom I spoke today works for a very old member. And he said generationally, what's going on is that the younger members are much more inclined to buy into this, as are their press secretaries. He actually took it a step further, he said. And he said, you know, some of the young press secretaries have lost respect for reporters and the work that they do. So I think that it's inevitable that they're going to have to capture this. They're going to have to use it. There's no choice. Even this curmudgeonly guy who wasn't going to do it now is. And what he found was he put up a Facebook page, you know, about 4,000 followers, something like that. And so he realized that it was quite powerful. The question I have, though, is, I mean, you know, I don't know, numbers. I mean, somebody else said, you know, we communicate through new media with a very select group of people who are inclined to follow us closely. And then it's inclined to work on the campaign, and we need them. Does that make sense to you? So that's kind of, does that answer a little bit? Mm-hmm. I'm so grateful you guys came. Thank you very much.
This has been a Communication Research Podcast, a production of the Communication Research Center at Boston University. For more information about the Communication Research Center, please go to www.bu.edu/com/crc. Thank you.